If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. Ghostbed, the coolest beds in the world.
The 2025 season has only just ended.
Lando Norris is the Formula One World Champion!
Oh my God.
But in little more than a month, our 2026 cars will hit the track for the first time. The teams have got to get their totally new cars built to totally new rules, ready to race. It's F1's shortest ever winter, but also the most important. So what's going to happen between now and the first pre-season test in January? Welcome to F1 Explains, the F1 winter. Hello, everybody. I'm Christian Hugill. On the way in our sort of last episode of the season, more on that in a minute, Williams team principal James Vowles, and alongside me, a man who was on our first episode of the season, so had to be here for our last. He just had to be. Mr. Lawrence Barreto. What a joy it is to be sat next to you in the last race of the season, Lawrence Barreto.
I'm honoured, Christian, to be sat here in the sun, yachts bobbing along in the marina.
Yes.
What a lovely setting for the final F1 Explains of the year.
Yeah, we're not at a Grand Prix. We're just in Lawrence's garden. It's a little joke for you there. Lawrence, have you enjoyed the 2025 Formula One season?
I've loved it. I think it's had everything that I hope a championship has, which is multiple contenders for the title, yes, multiple race winners, multiple new people on the podium.
Yes.
And great racing. It's been phenomenal.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun, hasn't it? We've all had a very nice time. And due to the relentless way that Formula One always pushes forward, we find ourselves already talking about 2026. We thought you were the man to explain this for us. As someone that, as we say, is always looking into the future yourself. Always one step ahead of the game, aren't you?
I'm trying to be, if I can. I'm just slightly disappointed my holiday has dissolved into almost nothing this winter.
It's true, yes. My first thing of the season is literally the day after I get back from holiday. We are recording this at the last race of the season, and to our right, Alex Jakes has just put his arms in the air as furious that we haven't invited him on by the looks of it. He's been on throughout the season. We don't need any more Alex Jakes, F1 TV commentator.
You always need more Alex Jakes.
I don't know. He's on a lot of the racing. Anyway, he gets to have a rest over the winter. He gets to rest his voice. He goes off to a commentator's retreat with David Croft, I understand. They sit there beside the pool. Now, let's start with the basics. We talk about this short winter, Lawrence. That is one reason why it's different. Why is this winter different?
So we've got new rules coming in, obviously, next year, Christian. New chassis rules and new power unit rules. And that means that the teams have had to pull all of their production schedules forward. So in the past, they would maybe had into January, maybe even into February as like the final moment in which the cars would kind of run off the conveyor belt in its fully formed, in its full form?
In its full form. Can you tell it's the end of the season? We're a bit tired.
Exactly.
In its full form. Lovely.
And because we've got early pre-season testing to test out these new cars, it means all of those production schedules move forward. So we've got a private test in Bahrain that will run over 5 days at the end of January, but teams can only use 3 of those days of running to put their cars out on track. The idea of that is to ensure that if they've had any problems in the production schedule, they might have an extra day or two to kind of get things sorted. Or if it rains, God forbid, in Barcelona in January, then they can maybe choose to run on one of the other 5 days. And then you've got 2 more tests in Bahrain to squeeze in. So that's 2 extra tests that we've got ahead of the season. And obviously a season with 24 races this year that goes quite deep into December. So
yeah,
there's just not that many weeks in between.
No, it's sort of like we say the F1 season. It's more like the F1 year, bar a few weeks, isn't it? It is a lot, which is brilliant. You know, we all love more Formula 1. We're going to talk a little bit more about what Lawrence was referring to with the test shortly with James Vowles. But before we speak to James, Lawrence, we should just say it is a lot of change, isn't it? Like, we've not really had anything like this before. And even if we've had similar, certainly not for a long time.
No, we've had the growth of the calendar, obviously. So now we're up to 24 races. And by that very nature, it means you just end much later in the year. And it also means that we're starting much earlier the following year. So that just means that the calendar weeks available are much shorter. Obviously, when you've got new regulations, it kind of, you start from a blank sheet of paper. So we're kind of in 2025. We've got rules that have been around for a long time. They've hit the ceiling of what they can do.
2022 was the first year of this rule set, wasn't it?
Exactly. So they've kind of hit the ceiling, the amount of development that they can do with that. Whereas 2026 onwards, it's a blank sheet of paper. And that just means that those amazing minds that we've got across all 10 teams, 11 from next year, just means that the opportunity to create something impressive is just increased. And that just means more hours in the factory trying to figure it out.
And it is an opportunity, isn't it? We say this with every rule set in Formula One. It is an opportunity if you've struggled in a particular rule set. I mean, for example, not meaning to single them out, but Mercedes will be the first to admit, you know, they've not fought for a world championship since 2021. That, for a team like Mercedes, they don't find acceptable for themselves. They want to be fighting for world championships. So if you're in a position like Mercedes, it's a bit of a reset, isn't it? It's a chance to put that behind you and go again.
Essentially, for everyone bar McLaren and Red Bull, who are fighting for the championship right until this, to the final race of the season with Lando, Oscar and Max, every team will see this as an opportunity. I think you mentioned Mercedes as one of those teams. Ferrari, for example, it's been a long old time since they've won a Constructors' Championship or a Drivers' Championship, and they turned the taps off on development back in April on the 2025 car to focus on 26. And I think if you're turning your taps off that early in the season, the second month of the Formula One season, it shows how much opportunity you believe 2026 offers you.
Speaking of opportunity in 2026, some teams have more resources than others. Williams are a team that openly admit they don't have the vast resources of teams like Ferrari and Mercedes. They've been speaking about 2026 for a long while. In fact, when James Vowles first came into the team, he was very open that he was looking towards 2026. So he's the perfect person to speak to as F1 explains the winter going into 2026. Let's hear from James Vowles. James Vowles, welcome back to F1 Explains. What a joy to see you.
It's fantastic to see you.
We are back in your office. Now, this is the second one of your offices we have been in all season. The last Bex here at Williams has just reminded me, was Japan, wasn't it? We've sort of merged all into one at this point, which was one of the most memorable moments of F1 Explains history where, well, I was about to say both of your drivers. So Carlos Sainz nearly came in. Alex Albon then did come in, and they did this because they were using the toilet that was in your, well, sort of within your office block, weren't they?
Exactly that. Yep. Summarised well. The good news is there is none here in Abu Dhabi, which is where we are now. So I strongly doubt one or both will walk in during this interview. But good to know. You don't normally do this in offices then.
No,
I think this is the only team principal office we've been in this year. We've done most of the team principals, but you are the only one who invites us into your office, which I think says a lot about you and a lot about Williams.
That's very kind. Good.
There we are.
Treat that as you will.
Exactly. James, we are talking about the winter months, or winter month in this case, of the Formula One season. Firstly, do you and the team at Williams and the teams in Formula One in general get any time off at all over winter?
Short answer, yes. And that's changed from how it was certainly just even a year or two ago. So we have now an enforced shutdown, which is brilliant. So that will take place from the 25th all the way through until the 2nd of January. Now, that is, as it is in the summer, life-changing, because what it means is when you down tools, down your laptop, there is no one working in the background, so you can come back to it in effectively in a good state. There's still various things that will carry on. There's some commercial deals, etc. There's legal. There's all those parts of the business. So for team principals specifically, there's still an element of work to do. But for the most part, it just gives the men and women that are working tirelessly a proper break.
I feel like we've all in life been to those like forced fun parties. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Where it's like somebody's like forcing you to have fun and it's all a bit overly regimented. You must know what I mean here.
I don't go to them.
Well, that's a good thing. There's nothing worse than forced fun. But forced leave is great, isn't it? Like forced, F1 is effectively forcing you to be like, stop, sit down and rest, because it doesn't come naturally to a lot of people in F1.
I had no idea where you were going with that. So probably recovered from a complete nosedive, if I'm honest, about 100 foot off the ground.
My career, well, vaguely recovering from complete nosedives.
Good, excellent stuff. Yes, I force my staff to take time off, I think is what you were asking a question of.
Vaguely, just saying that forced leave, F1 I suppose forces people to have a break, whereas that might not have been the case in previous years, I think might have been the question.
I don't think you're going to get an Emmy for this one.
No.
So you know. a lot of your work's brilliant quality.
A lot of it isn't. A lot of it isn't. Let's look at 2026. Firstly, when did Williams start to think about 2026?
First thoughts, then back at the end of 2023, which by then, none of the regulations were really any more than a sort of concept. Power unit a lot more established than that. But the reason for the end of 23 is you have to make sure you're planning your life cycle of the 24 car and the 25 car at that stage. And what resources are you going to put and where at what stage? So for us, probably answering the way that will make a lot more sense is in May 2024, we were significantly working with the Mercedes power unit side of the organization. So that was already in May 2024. Good chunk. That means aerodynamics, cooling systems. How do we lay it out? How do we structure it? That was in May 2024. From then onwards, our concept teams, around that point, from our concept teams, a good number of our aerodynamic teams, whilst you couldn't test in the wind tunnel, what you could do is lay the car out. And in fact, we made a number of different layouts for the 2026 car to try and understand what we think would optimize that regulation set. And that work was ongoing from May 24 all the way to the end of 2024.
And you've sort of answered my next question there in saying why it's so important. I can remember your early interviews when you'd just been appointed Williams team principal. You talked about 2026 really early on. I mean, as I said, my question was going to be, but why is it so important? And you've hinted at it there. It's because it's the rules reset, isn't it? It's a bit of a reset for Formula One.
Yeah, it's hugely important because in the time that I've been in the sport, I think this is the biggest change we've had. It's complete change of the power unit and a complete change in chassis regulations to the point where nothing's carryover, not even a bolt. So everything is start from scratch. But that creates brilliant opportunity if you can get ahead of it.
Something I find myself explaining to newer fans to Formula One a lot is when we go from one season to another, say 2024 into 2025, it is a new car, but there will be parts of the car that are very much evolution rather than revolution. When we're not in a rule set, a rule change, some parts of the car will evolve. When we're going into a new set of rules like we are with 5 into 6, are any parts of the car effectively copied and pasted? Is there any evolution rather than revolution, or is pretty much everything new?
So first small little pedantic correction, but from 24 to 25, we didn't change the chassis. We kept the chassis from the previous year. A number of teams did the same thing as well. Just illustrating, in fact, now that the capability was in the 24 car of where we are today. But it's important that the world understands that we do often change chassis, but in this particular occasion, it was an optimization for 2026 to not do so. Next, in terms of next year, you could, if you wanted to, for example, I'll take some instruments, the steering wheel that the driver uses. For the most part, what it does this year will still be usable next year. Now, we have chosen to optimize ours because the electrical deployment's quite different next year. So we wanted a slightly different button array. Also, when Carlos joined, he had a particular requirement and we've integrated that in as well. We didn't have to change the steering wheel. I think that's probably one of the ones you can put into the optionality side. When I sort of talk about bolts, etc., I mean, there are probably some elements that I carry over, but the front suspension, rear suspension, the chassis, the electrical systems, the wiring looms, all of it changes. So to your point, it is a whole new world.
So much is new. Yeah, so much is new. Now, let's get on to your questions. F1 explains at f1.com. Do keep sending in your questions over the winter. Of course, I'm talking to our listeners, James, not yourself, but you can send in questions if you fancy it, by all means. Rick from Maine says, will the teams get more pre-season testing next year because of the new rules? So, James, normally one pre-season test, that was certainly the case in 2025, but in 2026, there are three.
Exactly that. Yeah, we've moved up to a lot more days. And the first question will probably be, why? It's a whole new power unit, cooling system, etc. And it really is a huge challenge for us as businesses to make sure we have a product that's working, and for the power unit manufacturers to make sure they have a product that is absolutely doing what we expect it to do. On top of that, there's a change in synthetic fuel next year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that really is a whole new product from the ground up, and it needs some time on track to be able to use it and work with it. So the first test that we'll be having, which will be in Barcelona, that one is really, treat it as more than anything else, a number of installation runs. It'll be an opportunity for teams just to make sure that the car physically fits together. When you turn it on, it generally makes a noise and it moves. From then onwards, we're doing two Bahrain tests. And in those Bahrain tests, again, there's going to be some subtleties in this regulation set that we haven't thought about, that hasn't come out of the simulation. And for us, it presents really just another handful of days to make sure that when we go racing in Australia, it's a polished product and it's a sport.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101 night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
How close to the first test do you have to have a car ready to be able to ship to Barcelona? Because even getting ready for that Barcelona test in itself must be quite stressful for a lot of people.
I mean, if you really wanted to, you could have a car ready and built in Barcelona. Really extreme, but effectively ship everything out to Barcelona and build the car out there. No team will do that. What we'll do instead is a series of other tests. We have one that's called a VTT, which is virtual tack test. Every team will do the same thing now, where we'll build the car up for near enough 90% of what it is and just make sure we run it on a rig first. And what it does is just flush out some really early issues in what you're doing. But to your point, how, therefore, if we actually answer the question of when will teams have it ready by, probably circa 2 weeks before that, so that we can do other testing in the meantime.
We've mainly talked about work on the car, the regulation changes, but are there any other things that F1 teams take the time to do in particular over the winter months? You know, is it, I'm talking things like maybe practical things like hire new people, pit stop practice. What are the other things that people look at over the winter?
So hiring is an ongoing 365 days a year process. So that doesn't have any centralization there. But what does, so if I take how we design the car, we use CAD tools. That then goes into something called a PLM system. And then behind the scenes of that, how we build a car is in an ERP system. Lots of acronyms, I know. But long story short, you want to know how many components make up a car, and in that component, how many subcomponents make it up, and what materials they're made from. All of those systems, you can't really change easily in year. So you use the two brakes, one's the summer one, one's the winter one, just to make sure that that's updated to the latest patches, the latest level, like you would a home PC. So that happens. There's a lot of what I would call IT maintenance that just needs to take place in those points. Same with the wind tunnel. The wind tunnel is pretty much working, as you would imagine, 24/7. So we use this period just to make sure it's maintained and structured in the right way so that it's not unreliable in the season. But the constant processes, so training individuals, hiring individuals, that's something you want to make sure always goes on in the background at all times. The next element that takes place in those sort of winter months is it's a really good opportunity to take stock of where we are and where we want to be. They're always busy, but the point behind it, you obviously don't do that in the break itself, but what you're doing is just making sure you set forward your plans for your whole team. And that includes performance management, making sure you speak to every one of your individuals. I won't do that personally, but we'll have managers doing
that. Keep it there a long time.
Boy, there's a lot of people now. I'd like to, for what it's worth, you just wouldn't have enough time to do it. But the point behind it is make sure you know and you recognize your star performers within the organization. Make sure that you give everyone a plan as to how they can work their way forward on their own career. And that's sort of the bit that you want to do in those winter months before we're racing again.
Sarah in California and Kate from Sweden both sent the same question for you, James. They asked whether you think there'll be surprise winners, results, a change in the pecking order, if you will, in 2026.
So a change in the pecking order from where we are today, yes. I think if you go back to 2009, 2014, which is the other two major regulation changes, you had 2009 Braun GP, great documentary.
James, for those who don't know, did have something to do with that great story. It is a good documentary, by the way. It's a brilliant documentary, which you can see on Disney Plus about that whole story. Yeah.
Funny story, actually. I meet a lot of incredible individuals. Rachel, my partner, has never asked for a photo of anyone apart from Keanu Reeves. That's
really?
The only one. Yeah, 100%. I got a photo.
Keanu Reeves, who fronted the documentary, we should say, for those who are unaware
of
it. Yeah,
exactly that. So that yeah, it wasn't just he was walking down the street at that time. Wow, I haven't connected those two.
Yeah. Yes. He was massively impressed by Keanu Reeves in that documentary. Yeah, I'm wildly off topic, but it's never stopped me in the past. But with his big notebook, and like he seemed so interested
He was really, and he would quiz you as well. When you were going into it, he would go, just stop you there, James. If I go back to April 2009, I was like, I can't remember what happened last week. Anyway, back onto this. 2009, change in the pecking order. McLaren fell back. They're quite far behind. But by the end of the year in Abu Dhabi, they were really in a winning state. Braun had a fantastic year. Red Bull moved forward. Big change in pecking order. 2014, Mercedes started the dominance run. Williams also moving back up into a higher position as a result of it. So we have to acknowledge that these big regulation changes will shake the order up. That's part of the reason why they're good for the sport. What I would always say is this. You're sort of Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bulls, and McLaren are now in there. They're still brilliant entities that are able to develop at a very high rate. So you have to expect that if they're not there to start, they will be there at some point. The main thing for us is very clearly the reason why we've been forward investing in it is a shake up in the regulations, and it does give us an opportunity to move forward.
And congratulations on what you've achieved this season. You know, P5 in the constructors. I can remember speaking to Alex at the start of the season saying it could be a difficult. I mean, Alex does often err on the more pessimistic side in interviews, I find. He'll sort of set the expectations a little bit lower and overachieve, but he was saying it could be tough. You know, we're focusing on 2026, it could be tough. And he took a massive step forward. And that must excite you going into 2026, given you've ended the season with, you know, in such a good place. It feels from the outside.
I'm encouraged. There was just so much to do behind the scenes. So we've made steps. There's no doubt we've made steps. And we're starting to use tools and systems that just didn't exist 12 months ago. But I have the fortune of knowing what benchmark looks like, and we're still a long way away from it. So I think we're on a good path. But managing everyone's expectations, there is a huge amount more for us to do to be able to be fighting with giants.
Of course, but a fantastic start. Now, James, before we let you go, not just for this episode, but for the season, we mentioned a little earlier, we spoke to you in Japan. We put some clips of that interview on social media. A lot of people mentioned the picture frame that was on your desk, which was of your two drivers, Mr. Carlos Sainz and Alex Albon. Can you remember what you said to me about the picture at the time?
What I would have said, I think, in my mind anyway, is I don't even have a picture of my own family.
That's exactly what I was getting at.
Yeah. And I still don't have a picture of my family with me. But good news, actually. My family are here.
Oh, that's good. So even better.
I'd bring them in, but one would probably be throwing up on you by now. He's tiny. He's only 4 months old. It's not that he has an aversion to yourself.
Fine. I was going to say. I'm glad you said a small child there. That. I was going to say, yeah, fine.
And my daughter, who's two, would be just talking to you incessantly. So that's why they're not in the room right now.
Fine.
But I think they will be across the weekend.
Well, that's good to know. So still no picture frame.
No.
You also said that you expect that when we get to Abu Dhabi, the picture would still be here.
Yep.
We do have some breaking news, don't we?
We do.
James, would you like to reveal the breaking news?
So the breaking news is on my... it was an accident, first and foremost.
Disclaimer.
It was before Baku. So there's a correlation to this in terms of performance step as well. I accidentally knocked it off the desk and the frame and the picture went on the floor.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we didn't replace it from that. I did ask for it to be replaced. It was important to me. It was important to them.
Sure.
But I did not have that picture back. But what we did do is we replaced it with one that I hope the world understands why I did.
So Frank Williams.
Indeed. It's inspiration, really. It's fantastic to see on my desk and really look at it, because he is part of the reason why I'm here. He's an inspiration. This team has his name above the door. So to that point, that is what's been on my desk since before Baku.
So, you know, negative side, the family didn't replace the boys.
No.
But the positive is Sir Frank did.
Correct.
And I feel like that's a good thing.
Exactly that.
Sir Frank would be proud to be there, I'm sure, of all his great memories.
I don't know if he'd be proud to be on my desk, but it means a lot to me anyway.
Oh, fantastic. Well, listen, James, already said huge congratulations on everything you've done this year. You know, a great season for Williams. It's great to see you back on the podium and fighting up there. Excited for 2026. And thank you for coming on F1 Explains throughout the season. And thank you to Team Williams as well, who've been brilliant in helping us explain the sport to our legions of fans all over the world. We really appreciate it. Thank you, James.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much to Mr. James Vowles. Always a pleasure to speak to, even if he does take the mickey out of me from time to time, but I can cope with that. We'll allow it, don't worry. Lawrence Barretto would never do such a thing, would you?
No, I think it balances out then, doesn't it? I don't take the mickey out of you ever, Christian, do I? Do I?
No, I don't think so.
No, you don't have to think about that, Christian.
Oh, well, you know,
we just shared an office for the whole weekend in Abu Dhabi, and yeah. I've not taken the mick out of you once.
No, I don't think you have. You're largely nice to me. Producer Jamie's shaking his head. No, not to my face, he hasn't, producer Jamie says. Fine.
Lawrence, I'm going to have to cut that out, producer Jamie, please.
Lawrence Barretto, F1 TV presenter and Formula One correspondent. McLaren and Red Bull fought for the title up to the last race of 2025, of course. We've been talking to James there, and he's been saying, you know, that they felt able to focus on 2026 from an early stage, even though they did make gains in 2025. Does it put the likes of McLaren and Red Bull on the back foot for 2026? Due to the fact they were fighting for this world championship right up until the last race here in Abu Dhabi?
It will have an impact for sure. We saw back in 2008 when Lewis was fighting for the title right up until the end with Ferrari. In 2009, those teams that fought towards the end before that big rule change in 2009,
sure.
they started the season further back. I think McLaren were one of the teams that actually turned the taps off reasonably early. And so I don't think that they will feel like they're too much on the back foot. Red Bull, though, were bringing updates after the summer break. You know, there was a big upgrade in Italy, which has actually transformed Max's season and actually been able to haul him back in. So I think it will have an impact. Laurent Mekies has accepted that it will have some impact because you've got a finite amount of money to spend in the cost cap. And if you're spending money on one thing, you obviously can't spend it on another. Yeah. So I think it will have an impact. But equally, there was going to be a lot of low-hanging fruit in this new set of regs very quickly because it will become a development race, a development war, where there is so much opportunity out there. The more updates you can bring, the quicker you can bring them. That will give you performance quite quickly. So I think we'll see the relative performance of all of the teams next year change quite rapidly. And if you start the season poorly, just like Red Bull did in 2009, for example, they were back to almost stopping Jenson Button from winning that title by the end of the year.
Thankfully, from a Jenson Button perspective, they didn't. He was very grateful, his only Formula One world title. Now, we spoke a little bit about it with James there, but the engines, or the power units, as you will hear them referred to next season, they are all new. 50% of the car's power will come from the battery, unlike the plane flying very low ahead of us. That's power isn't coming from the battery. Are we going to see some teething problems in testing, Lawrence? Reliability generally in Formula One nowadays is very good. Can we expect that to change, at least in the short term?
I think initially there will be a risk of reliability across the board, you know, from the chassis components through to the power unit, because it is such a dramatic change. We've got active aero on the chassis side coming in, so you'll have movable front and rear wings next year. This is all new tech, obviously, that's going to be introduced next year. Then on the power unit side, you mentioned the greater reliance on electrification on battery power. It's new tech, right? And they're all going to be pushing the boundary as much as they can to try and get an advantage on the others. So I think there will be question marks on reliability, which is why they've done the first test in Barcelona as a private test, why they've also given them 5 days, of which they could use 3 days of running, just so that if there are any niggles that they need to iron out, they've got a couple of days to fix it before they get to run the car again, and that won't be a problem and they won't lose running. But I would expect the likes of Mercedes and Ferrari, who have obviously coped with regulation changes in the past, to cope better.
Yeah.
And then you've got new manufacturers coming in, impressive manufacturers like Audi, Ford joining up with Red Bull powertrains to create that entity, Honda coming back, General Motors in a few years coming in as well. I expect them to encounter some problems, just because that's the nature if you're starting a new project, right? This is the first time they're going to be competing with a new engine in Formula One, and you would expect them to have a few niggles, but I would expect them to kind of get gains quite quickly.
Yeah, right. Speaking of those new teams, you mentioned Ford. As we say, Red Bull making their own engines for the first time with the help of Ford. There is also Audi, who have taken over the Sauber team, but will be making their own engines for the first time. Then there are engine suppliers like Honda, who have moved to a new team. They will be supplying Aston Martin. There's no hiding it, is there, Lawrence? For these teams, there's a lot of work to do.
But I think that's the brilliance of Formula One, that you've got the potential to really make big gains if you just do a better job than everyone else. And if you look at Aston Martin, you mentioned that they're teaming up with Honda. They've got to do their own gearbox for the first time. They used to take that from Mercedes when they were a customer of Mercedes. They've got to do the rear suspension. They used to take that from Mercedes. They've then got to kind of blend in a new manufacturer with Honda that they've not worked with before.
Yeah.
And then they've got to build the chassis. And, you know, this is Adrian Newey's first chassis. And, of course, everyone has expected it to be a rocket because he's had so much success in the sport. But actually, blending all of those things together is a huge challenge. Even if all of the components are individually brilliant, blending them together and getting them to work efficiently is going to be a challenge.
We mentioned Audi there. Oh, and by the way, with Cadillac and Ford, we spoke to both Cadillac and Ford on F1 Explains a few weeks ago, twice in a couple of weeks. So scroll back on this feed to hear more about those projects should you want to. We're going to be speaking to Audi in the new season. Of course, exciting for the sport. To my mind, Lawrence, the first time in a while that an existing team has had such a facelift, isn't it? Again, a big challenge for them over the winter. We know they've had this unique setup where Jonathan Wheatley has been team principal and running Sauber as it's gone racing every weekend. We've had Matteo Bonotto, who's sort of been a second team principal in a way, looking at the Audi project. This is the winter now where that really does all get merged together, isn't it?
It's a huge challenge, but I think you've just mentioned two very experienced people. And Jonathan Wheatley's had nearly two decades with Red Bull. Mattia Bonotto has had even more time at Ferrari.
They They do fly low, the planes in Abu Dhabi, don't they?
I suppose we are quite close to the airport.
Very
as
close
well,
to the airport, which is convenient for us at the end of the race weekend. Do carry on, Lawrence.
But they do have two very experienced Formula One experienced people, and that will help them kind of do this transition from a team who are used to punching above their weight in the midfield in the form of Sauber to trying to become a manufacturer off the ilk of a Mercedes, a Red Bull and a McLaren. So it's a big job. They're using the facility in Hinwil in Switzerland for their chassis. So that's where all of the Saubers have always been built, and they're enhancing that over a number of years. But, to Williams's point, it takes time to improve the infrastructure. On the power unit side, Audi have had such immense amount of success across all sorts of motorsport, from the Dakar Rally to the World Endurance Championship. So you expect them to be able to get the very best out of their engine in Formula One. But again, it will take time.
It will, and when you do speak to Audi and you speak to Cadillac and you speak to Red Bull Ford, something they all are very keen to emphasise is they are coming into Formula One for the long term. It's not like they are expecting to come in, jump on the podium in their first race. They are looking at this as a years, even decades long project, all three of those. So we'll see them develop as time goes on. Perhaps the most exciting thing about the new season, Lawrence, brings new helmet designs, new car liveries. I also just wonder, does it bring new shoe designs for Lawrence Barreto? Because if you have been with F1 Explains for a while, we do consistently talk about Lawrence, who loves a jazzy shoe. And today, when we're recording, no exception. Do you want to just talk us through these bad boys on your feet at the moment, Lawrence?
So I've got some Nike Air Force Ones on.
Other trainers are available.
And they are. And I'm not an ambassador for Nike, to be clear. But
you are open to that, I would imagine, Lawrence. should anybody be listening?
Never say never.
No, sure.
They're hand-painted, purple, lime green, and gold. But what's interesting about the purple is it goes purple when the sun's out.
Stop
when
it.
I go inside, it will go back to white.
Stop it.
Yeah, exactly that. So you keep an eye on this later on, Christian. Now, in fact, you can actually see because the jeans were covering part of it, and now it's changing purple. So you asked me about what innovations. While the Christian is overawed by that development on my shoes, that's what I'm aiming for next year, to step it up. I'm working with a shoe designer about what I can do to level it up. Maybe flashing lights, maybe some sort of smoke machine.
Smoke machines keep coming up on this podcast regularly at the moment, but yeah, carry on.
I'm just intrigued because this has been a success, light to dark.
You're telling me.
So and maybe some glow in the dark trainers next year as well. That might be for Singapore, something like that. So yeah, don't worry. The team are working hard over the winter to come up with some new designs
Listen,
for next year.
If that's not a reason to check out F1 TV in 2026, I don't know what is. Yes, we'll show Formula One racing, but you can also see Barreto's trainers. That's remarkable. I've never seen a trainer like it. I mean, I was impressed with them in the first place, I won't lie to you. But the differing paint jobs as to the lights and conditions, remarkable. Well done everyone.
Thank you.
Excellent, brilliant stuff. Right, that's it from us. Next week, a Christmas treat. It's exciting, isn't it, Lawrence? I've got to pick some of my favourite moments from the season, and this won't be on it, unfortunately, but only because there's only been a week in between. Otherwise this would have been right up there, I can assure you. Don't worry. I like to be transparent. And don't forget, we've got three seasons worth of F1 Explains on this feed, so inevitably you'll have missed bits. Scroll back from this season, plenty for you to listen to. We've got new listeners joining us all the time, so maybe you've got a bit of travel in the Christmas season, maybe you just need a bit of time to yourself if the family are getting too much. There's lots for you to listen to, and also lots for you to enjoy on F1's other official podcasts. Of course, F1 Beyond the Grid has got in-depth interviews from people in and around the world of Formula One. They're great to listen to over the winter break. I'm imagining, Lawrence, again, something we talk about a lot on this podcast with the F1 TV crew, I'm imagining that's the one you need to complete the hat trick of official F1 podcasts. You'll have done F1 Nation, I'm fully aware. You've obviously done F1 Explained. Have you ever been on Beyond the Grid?
No, but I'm not sure I will ever qualify for Beyond the Grid because I'm not a racing driver.
No, but they have legendary figures from the world of Formula One. Also, Lawrence, they do it every week. Got a lot of things to fill. So, listen, I wouldn't rule it out. Producer Jamie, we're not ruling it out, are we?
No.
I love to talk about Formula One, so anyone who wants to chat Formula One with me, I will chat back.
Okay, there you go, the door is open. Lawrence, thank you. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much for coming on today, and I was about to say throughout the season, but actually it was the first and last episode. So yeah, thank you very much for joining us in these episodes.
Yeah, I didn't want to highlight that, Christian, so I'm glad you made reference to that.
It's producer Jamie. He has his favourites, and there's not much I can do about
that's
that.
That's okay. Okay. I've enjoyed my time here whenever you want me.
Thank you. We'll fix that going into 2026. Lars Bretto, thank you very much. Back for one final time in 2025 next week. Until then, bye for now.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.